they've experienced, whether trauma from childhood and adolescence, then going through the breakup or divorce. It's taking these lived experiences, they go into a dreamlike state, and all these experiences, all these highly charged emotions, they're being transformed, transmuted. As that happens, as they're digesting those lived experiences, it's healing those deep emotional wounds. They come through it, they're feeling lighter. There's a growing sense of freedom. At the same time, it's building this foundation so that these individuals come through with more
Awakenge, this is Mental Matters, hosted by Asako Toto.
So I actually you had an interest in the Eastern medicine, and also moving to live in the Kiowa and Kiowa Apache tribe at a young age around 17 was a bold move. What compelled you to take the leap and immerse yourself in the culture at that point in your life? How was the experience for you?
Well, starting from a very early age, even early childhood, I was drawn to Native indigenous peoples of various cultures, but especially Native Americans. And at the age of 14, when I started hearing about the traditional Native doctors and the kinds of experiences they had, like going through the vision quest, and they would have these profound visions, and they would be visited by these extraordinarily powerful forces. That fascinated me, and I was thinking, wow, if I'm ever given the opportunity, this is what I'm going to do with my life. And so by the time I was 17, I saved up money, I bought a car, I took off on my own, I was still in high school. I landed among this community of predominantly Kiowa Indians. My car didn't get me as far as Arizona, where I initially thought I was going, but I felt a stronger resonance with the Kiowa people and started going into the peyote meetings, the ceremonies, sitting up all night with the Native elders. And it was during the meetings that I met my mentor, Horace Dolkai, who was one of their last surviving traditional doctors. During the apprenticeship, Horace passed on portions of his own healing gifts to me. And then the vision quest typically goes like about 4 days and nights. You're alone in the mountains. No food, no water. And it's during the vision quest that you earn the right to work with these gifts of healing, and you receive additional gifts or powers to facilitate the healing of yourself and other individuals.
So you mentioned that you moved from the States to definitely in the Northern America, if I'm not mistaken. So that transition from moving from the Western medicine to the Eastern medicine, how did that feel? Did you ever struggle in terms of that?
I think I've always had this flexibility or this adapted nature that I'm able to move into different cultural contexts, and I feel very comfortable, at ease. Just I get bored if I just stay in one narrow cultural framework. So initially I started out training with this traditional Kiowa doctor. And for many years, I've continued to go on the vision quest where I go out those 4 days and nights to fast without food and water. But being open, very curious, I've spent time in India and Sri Lanka, considerable amounts of time. And about 20 years ago, I started training with this master from China in the internal martial arts that has its roots in Taoism. And there are all these intensive internal practices through which you build this presence, this force, this power within your body and mind. It deepens your connection to the higher power, and then it also enables you to develop this presence, this foundation. You're more grounded. It's awakening this body-mind connection, this greater intelligence of the body and mind that most people never tap into.
So it's fascinating that you were chosen as an apprentice to so early on by your mentor, as you mentioned earlier, your mentor. What qualities did he see in you, and what apprenticeship experience like learning from such as renowned healer?
I think there are a number of qualities that they look for when you possess these, and when someone who possesses this kind of power is going to consider you as a mentor. One, you need to have a certain foundation, mental stability, because these kinds of powers or forces are so strong. And if a person lacks that foundation, they could end up being a little mentally unstable. Mm. There's the fact that a lot of people not knowing how to deal with their own emotional wounding, if they carry a lot of trauma and they don't deal with that, and they receive these kinds of gifts or healing powers, and if they're not dealing with their emotional wounding, that too, then they could get into trouble with it. There's also the fact that to pass on these kinds of healing gifts or powers, they need to understand that the person who's going to receive this gift is going to use these healing gifts or powers appropriately, because some people, I guess being kind of stupid, may misuse them or use them to harm other people. And so they have to, a mentor who possesses this kind of extraordinary power has to be careful who they select as an apprentice to make sure they pass it on, that the recipient will use it correctly to help other people.
You mentioned that the fact that in terms of the qualities when it comes to apprenticeship, in terms of the mentors need to be careful into choosing a certain person. So how did your mentor know that you were genuine when it came to learning more about actually this type of apprenticeship? How did he know that your intentions were not bad? They were only good.
Individuals who have developed to this level possess additional capabilities, sensory capabilities. My mentor never built himself as a psychic. Mm. And yet I have never in my life encountered an individual who had possessed such capabilities. There are instances, for instance, one example, got into an argument with him, and before I could get the words out of my mouth, he would rebut my argument. He knew exactly what I was going to say, and he countered my argument. So it was this mixture of emotion. On one hand, I was angry, but on the other hand, I was laughing at the same time. But I saw him do that with his wife at one point, where he would, before she could get a word out, he would just counter her argument, and she was like blowing gaskets. And I could be riding across country with him. In many instances, he's very quiet. He didn't speak much, but he would be describing incidents from my past as if he was watching a movie on a screen. You could not hide anything from him. So when I first encountered him, the very first meeting, he didn't say too much, but the second time I saw him, I was talking with a friend of mine who was about my age, and my mentor was across the hall in a different room talking with this elderly man who adopted my friend. And my mentor just stopped and stared at me as if he knew something in an instant. And that is typical. A lot of these individuals, when they find an individual who is to be their apprentice, they'll just have a knowing. And I think he knew in that very instance that I would apprentice from him. Yeah. And that later that night, as we're lined up outside the teepee and we circled around the teepee and went in to begin that all-night ceremony, he reached out to me during the night. He began to speak with me, and that was his effort to make contact. And then sometime later, I was in college. My grades are starting to go down because at some level, I knew I wasn't doing what I needed to do at that time. And when I approached him, and I was physically shaking because I was afraid, well, this only works for Native Americans. You're just a cute white kid. Just good luck there. But when I asked him, I was shaking and said, I want to learn to do what you're doing. And he just says, can you start fasting? And I'm still shaking. And I said, yeah, sure. And had me drive down into the Wichita Mountains, not eating, not drinking, the next 2 days and nights. And the fact that I would just drop everything and start fasting, head down into the mountains, it's like, okay, this guy's pretty serious. So that's how I knew.
That's very fascinating, the story of knowing that you were truly his apprentice. And you mentioned training Chinese, and also like before we got get into that, you mentioned that you travel to India, Sri Lanka. How was that like? What were your purpose? Would you say that it was the same purpose of being able to go to learn these systems of healing, and also I would say that entering that third eye, opening that third eye, most people refer it to that.
It's a very mixed experience being in India, Sri Lanka. There's kind of, to be honest, a love-hate relationship. There are things that I find extraordinarily beautiful about the people and the culture. There are aspects that I hate. For instance, there's the casteism. There's a racism that I find disgusting. I don't know if you're aware of, but there's instances where a number of students from different parts of Africa have gone to India, and they have unfortunately been subjected to horrific abuses or mistreatment because of the racism, the casteism. There's a way in which, because of this imaginary distinction, that this kind of idiocy where they've designated people of various social rank or lack thereof based on this caste that you're born into. And so people of the lower caste, like what they refer to as the Dalits, are subjected to horrific abuses, especially among the women, relegated to what they call manual scavengers, which is cleaning up other people's excrement and more likely to be sexually assaulted. And so when I see people of the lower caste, it's important to me, I will show them that I regard them as equally important. And, you know, because I know, I understand the abuses that many of them have been subjected to. And there's the communal violence that has been prevalent. Being in Sri Lanka, there was the war that went on for nearly 30 years. And because of the Sinhala nationalist trying to, you know, the fact that you're from South Africa, you understand apartheid in the sister of apartheid.
Yeah,
against the Tamil people, where those people were marginalized and discriminated against, and the violence enacted against the Tamil people. And they fought back ferociously, and I fully supported their drive for independent homeland. It pains me when I see people. I feel everyone is equal, no matter what race or nationality. And what matters is, you know, the qualities. Is each individual, are you a genuine human being? What contribution do you make? Do you have a good heart? How are you contributing to society? Are you intelligent? You know, what can you bring to the table? And so I feel so strongly about that. And now we see it in societies all around the world. Russia's barbaric invasion of Ukraine, there are a lot of genuine Russian people. But it pains me, the suffering of the people in Ukraine right now who are fighting so desperately for their survival. And it pains me that there are people that have a poisonous heart that align with Russia, that, you know, supporting autocratic regimes, autocratic leaders who are creating so much suffering on the planet. And it's important for us to stand up for those who are being subjected to these horrific abuses in any way, and also for the welfare of animals as well. Yeah, to whatever we can do to make a difference on the planet in terms of caring for the planet, caring for other human beings, and caring for the animals as well.
But going back to that thing, you mentioned that in terms of you came across racism towards Black people, and as I said, that you mentioned apartheid. I believe that in some sense, some Asia countries still have that thing of thinking that they are so superior than Black people, mostly because they are regarded in a lower class. But I don't want to get in that conversation. But I want us to move to now to mental health in general, since, as you know, this podcast is more deeply on mental health. So what kind of practices did you learn from your mentor and other indigenous healers regarding emotional well-being, negative native cultures seem to take a holistic view of mind, body, spirit.
I'm doing a combination of things. I'm combining a combination of approaches. There's the fact that I suffered a lot of traumatic abuse during my childhood and adolescence.
Yeah.
And receiving this transmission of power from my mentor, as that power began to awaken within me, and a lot of these traumas began to resurface, and I was consumed by this overwhelming emotional pain as that happened. And so instinctively, I taught myself to dive into the depth of the pain, and I would go so deep into it, but at a certain part, I could feel it breaking open, coming out of my body in waves, and there were these powerful emanations of warmth glowing from within me. And as that happened, you know, over time, I began to develop this whole intensive system of meditation practices. And before I do the work that I learned from the native doctor, I teach people these practices because we need to be able to learn to work constructively with our emotions. So whether you're going through a breakup or divorce or the death of a loved one, or you've lost your job and you don't know how you're going to pay the bills, how you're going to survive, we take these hits in life. And so when you can acknowledge what's happening, what you feel in response to it, descend into the depth of your emotions wherever they arise in your body, breathe very softly, deeply from the depth of your emotions, and doing that, it awakens this innate healing intelligence. As you digest your lived experiences and your subsequent emotional responses, it enables you to heal the deep emotional wounds, to work through or resolve issues, and to tap into your body and mind's innate creative problem-solving capabilities. So that's the preliminary of what I teach people. It makes their bodies more open and receptive to the healing work, what I learned from the Native traditional American doctor, and it's also homework for them to do. Now, the work I learned from the Native doctor, again, he transmitted portions of his own healing gifts. But in receiving these gifts of healing, also as I go through the vision quest, the 4 days and nights alone in the mountains without food and water, I receive additional gifts of healing. So as I work with people, I work in the context of a conduit. I allow this extraordinarily powerful presence to work through me. This presence will go into people's bodies and minds, a very deep, profound level. So whatever they've experienced, whether trauma from childhood and adolescence, again, going through the breakup or divorce, it's taking these lived experiences, they go into a dreamlike state, and all these experiences, all these highly charged emotions, they're being transformed, transmuted. As that happens, as they're digesting those lived experiences, it's healing those deep emotional wounds. They come through it, they're feeling lighter. There's a growing sense of freedom. At the same time, it's building this foundation so that these individuals come through with more resources so they can cope more effectively with the challenges of their daily life. On a physical level too, I'm also working with people to suffer from heart disease or stroke or digestive respiratory disorders, maybe injured in an automobile accident. So this presence working through me to go in to facilitate repair within the physical body. Some people feel a sense of reconstruction of injured or diseased tissue within the body, healing, you know, if they're suffering from a digestive disorder such as colitis or Crohn's disease or irritable bowel syndrome, or if they were injured in an automobile accident. So this form of healing, a lot of people are not familiar with it in our mainstream modern day world. And yet among indigenous peoples, this was the main form of medicine that was practiced for thousands of years. Sadly, a lot of people have lost touch with it because as a lot of these indigenous practices have unfortunately died out because people just in order to learn or develop these gifts of healing, one goes through a very intensive, arduous process. It takes years and years of intensive training. And yet these days, a lot of people are drawn to the conveniences of modern day life, smartphones, yeah. And yeah. Yes, yes. All the other distractions and comforts of the modern day world.
Actually, it's funny that I think I was about to ask the question on the answer that you just gave. And also on that same conversation, you mentioned that you're having reminiscing, re-entering your childhood trauma and your relationship in your 20s. How have indigenous teachings and your overall experiences, the experiences that you just mentioned, influenced your understanding of mental health and therapy? How has indigenous and therapy?
Wow. I feel there's tremendous insight and understanding that has been gained in recent years, maybe starting in the past 100 years.
Hey.
You know, for instance, Carl Jung, Jungian psychology, and a whole succession of individuals after him, and tremendous insight into the emotional wounding that people experience that wasn't available before. You know, there was just this pervasive dysfunction on so many levels, you know, just alcohol consumption, heavy alcohol consumption in much of Europe, and there was all kinds of dysfunction as far as the verbal, emotional abuse of children, many children subjected to. And I hear many accounts of this, even from my own family, past generations. My great-grandfather, for instance, being extraordinarily physically abusive to his children, subjecting them to like horrific beatings. My grandfather, another grandfather, drank very heavily and physically battered his wife, my grandmother. And so there's this profound dysfunction that has been so much a part of our families for generations, and generation after generation of children being abused. And so as they grow up, they grow into parents, and they end up, that cycle of abuse perpetuates itself, very sadly so. And so there's tremendous insight and understanding that we didn't have available to us before that is now more widely available. And yet every tool or resource has its limitations. We do need the cognitive understanding of our emotional wounding. And yet I went into psychotherapy in my mid to late 20s when a lot of the traumas of my childhood and adolescence were resurfacing. And I gained a much needed cognitive understanding, but it only went so far. And so it was by working with the meditation practices that I began to develop that these wounds begin to heal, but also working with some of the indigenous healers, you know, say like from Brazil and the Philippines. And when I started going back to the Vision Quest, the 4 days and nights to fast alone in the mountains without food and water, this native indigenous practice, that these traumatic wounds that I was carrying, that they truly began to heal. And as I continue taking these steps, I've been going back to the Wichita Mountains twice a year for 30 years now. And you can do the math how many times I've gone. And each time I'd gone, there are times I'd be on the mountain and these various traumatic or otherwise deeply wounding experiences, they would come up. They would come back. I would be reliving these experiences, all these highly charged emotions, the impressions of what I had lived through, sensory impressions, and I'd be digesting these experiences. They'd be transformed in a way that come fuel for growth, building this new foundation. And for much of the population, much of the human populace throughout the world, these resources are lacking. And sadly so, because I encounter people all the time, every day, just being out in the city, traveling across the country, different parts of the world, and I cannot help but see and feel what's going on in people's bodies. And I feel the emotional wounding. I see and feel the trauma they're carrying. And much of this wounding trauma just is not healing on its own. And with a lot of people are not seeking out intervention. They just carry that emotional wounding, and it affects them and their relationships with other people, and they reenact it with their children, they reenact it with their romantic partners, and so we need these interventions from these various traditions that we find in different parts of the world. We need a lot of practice, a lot of intervention. There's a lot of healing that needs to be done.